So what does wellness mean to you? Welcome to another edition of Wellness Wednesdays. I am your host, Eric Collard. This week we have another specialty doctor in their building, and Dr. Annie Jean, who's a podiatrist, and we're going to talk about podiatry. We're going to talk about some great sports that she's doing and some great results that she's getting all over North America. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Eric. My pleasure to be here.
So can you tell me how you got into podiatry? And what is podiatry in your words?
Well, podiatry is the medicine that studies the feet. So we treat feet problems and we treat the foot related problems. So everything about sometimes patients come and they have back problems and it's related to the feet. So we can do biomechanical exams and prescribe orthotics. People come in and have ingrown toenails and or warts or infection of the foot. So we can treat all of that. It's like the dentist for the teeth, right?
Okay.
It's the same thing, but for the foot.
So you're the foot dentist, is what you're saying.
Yes, but it's way more funner because we can actually, our patients can talk to us, you know, like when we treat them. Yeah. But for the dentist, they have their mouth wide open and they can't talk to the dentist. So, yeah, it makes our job lots of fun.
And probably people aren't as scared coming to you than they would be going to the dentist.
That's what I think, too.
Yeah. So how did you get into this?
Well, funny enough, my brother's a dentist, so he was trying to get me to go into dentistry school, and I was studying biopharmaceutical at Ottawa U for five years, and my last year was the deciding year where to go. So I discovered podiatry then because I was running back then and I got injured, and somebody told me maybe you should see a podiatrist because maybe it's a foot problem. And funny enough, I did not really know podiatry, and I started to do my research, and I found that the school that offered the program is in Trois-Rivières, and that's the only school in Canada for podiatry school. Other than that, podiatrists graduate from the United States. So I decided to pursue my researches, and I found a few podiatrists around the area where I shadowed for a year, and I got into podiatry right after. So I applied actually in dentistry and podiatry, and I got accepted in podiatry right away, and I continued on, and I don't regret at all my choice.
Yeah. Well, it's dentistry's loss, really, for having you in podiatry. And it's funny how a lot of people, they obviously gravitate towards their interests, and it's almost scratching your own itch. You obviously had an injury, and you start to want to find out a bit more about the foot, and next thing you know, you'll become a podiatrist. So how does that help you as an athlete, knowing what you know?
Well, as an athlete and an endurance athlete, we spend so much time on our feet that we do get injured. So many of the injuries I have probably had. And so I can understand. And you can also understand how the foot hits the ground every step, and what happens to the bones and what happens to the ligaments. So when you're talking about the foot should absorb shock when it hits the ground, well, you actually see it in your mind, how the foot actually reacts and how the knees and the hips and the back are all related. So I guess I just live it, so I can fully understand my patients.
And I know a little bit about biomechanics, obviously not as much as you, but for the people at home that don't really know what goes on in the foot, can you just describe a little bit about how the foot absorbs some of the shock, or however you want to word it?
Yeah.
Especially in the running form, I think there'd be something.
Yes. That... Well, I can talk about that through the running gait analysis, because what I usually do is get my patients on the treadmill, and then I have a camera system, one on the side, one on the back. And then I usually make them run barefoot, and then we get the shoes on thereafter, and then I make them run with the shoes. Most often than not, it happened two times where my patients actually were running very, very heavy on the treadmill, and they were heel striking right there barefoot. Usually that doesn't happen, because when you're barefoot, the body kind of it wants to limit the absorption or limit the shock. So what happens is the foot's gonna hit the ground midfoot usually, and that's where usually the bones will kind of collapse and absorb shock. When you hit the ground with the heel, and when it's, for example, too far forward, then your body is all the way back compared to your foot, and that creates a lot of shock, usually in the knees and the hips, because they're less flexed at that point. So when I put the shoes on for my patients, they put back their shoes on and then they run, then you can see the pattern usually change, because the shoe is gonna prevent them from feeling the ground. So then the gait completely changes, and the patient usually doesn't really know. They think that they run normally or the same, but then we synchronize the videos and we look at them side by side, and it's completely different. And then I try to get them to run the same way without shoe, but with their shoe.
That's great. So then you're actually trying to get them to be a little more aware of what's happening.
Exactly.
And I know you know Blaise Dubois, based out of Quebec City, and he talks about big shoes make your feet dumb.
Yes.
And I've used that analogy quite a bit in a lot of stuff that I teach, but it's nice to hear it from a professional, because it's, and you see this day to day. And I've seen your setup upstairs, and it's a wonderful setup. It's nice to have that technology so you can, because I tell people, and I do some video analysis as well, not as complex as yours, but I tell a lot of people, like, well, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. But when you show them,
yes,
all of a sudden they're believers.
Yes, and then they actually see it. And sometimes when they keep on heel striking or having too long of a stride,
yeah.
Well, I give them tips while they're on the treadmill, and I keep on giving video, getting the videos on, and then suddenly the gait changes. And then we can mimic the barefoot, but right away, like in the matter of minutes, they can change. And then they actually see the difference. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think this is where the feedback loop is really important, whether it's running or anything else in the world. Like getting that feedback, especially when you're swimming. I was talking to a couple of my athletes. We're going through some of the swimming stuff. And like they're like, oh, no, I'm doing that. I'm like, no, I can tell you you're not. But again, it's not everyone's got that really good awareness.
Yes.
Other than 100 or thousands of hours that you spend outdoors or being active, how do you think that people can develop that awareness through that feedback mechanism? What else? How can people get proper form?
Well,
whether it's running or cross-country skiing or snowshoe running, any of that stuff.
To get the proper form.
Yeah. Is there any tips that you can give to, because I mean, people like you and I that have been doing this for a while or that are very aware of the biomechanics, it's fairly easy. But for someone that's just coming in, what are some tips that you can give them to get them thinking about their running form or their snowshoe running form or cross-country skiing form?
Being efficient is number one. So usually I tell them to be as efficient as possible. And usually it's by making less noise on the ground. So fast feet, a high cadence, and the more movement, the faster the feet on the floor, on the ground, the less impact, the less time spent on the ground. I also talk to them about standing tall, leaning a little bit forward from the ankles, and moving the arms. Mostly, I tell them as much as you're moving the arms, mostly like going, say, uphills, or the legs are going to follow. So if you want a high cadence, I just tell them tips like move your arms a little faster, and the legs are going to follow, and try to make as less noise as possible. So they're going to understand, or the feet are going to usually hit the ground a little less hard. So usually more on the midfoot. But it's all about efficiency, because the more you if you want to run for a long time, you need to be as efficient as possible to prevent all these injuries.
And to actually enjoy it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
that's another big component of it.
Yes.
So you see all kinds of runners and athletes,
yes.
but you seem to specialize a bit more in the higher end folks. Some of the the probably more elite or.
Well, no, actually, I see them all. Some patients come and see me because they want to start running and they want to make sure they have the good form. Some patients come and see because they have an injury and they want to go back to a first 10K or a first half marathon, and they are always or mostly injured, and they want to know why. Usually I get them to come to the clinic for an assessment first, a biomechanical exam, because I feel that if I don't, I'm working in a black box. So the biomechanical exam is I measure their feet, their angles when they're standing up, how do they walk, is there a shorter leg on one side, do they pronate, do they supinate, how their heel hits the ground, and we do a full postural exam. So then after that I can see if there's issues and that I can after understand when they're running on the treadmill.
Yeah, because we're all connected.
Yeah.
How we stand makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And vice versa. So what would you say is the biggest difference from, I would say, a beginner runner to a more experienced or a higher end, high performance runner?
Well, my gosh.
I'm really putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. the beginner runner we will probably work a lot on technique. So from the feet up to the shoulders.
Yeah.
Most of the time they're very tense. They move a lot the upper body. So their hips drop a lot every time they're on stance on one leg. And we talk a lot about shoes, because usually the shoes are the most important aspect of it also, that can influence the gait. If they don't have proper shoes, then we start with that. The more expert runner will usually have a good gait, good upper body, but sometimes it's just the cadence that we work more often. We're gonna work on the posture, but just the leaning posture. And sometimes they come in and they say, "Yeah, I'm a midfoot striker, I'm sure, but I see the pattern on the shoe." And then we do the running gait analysis, and when we pause the video, sometimes there's a big difference on the heel strikes compared to the barefoot running technique. Like their own, and
yeah.
When you compare them together, yeah.
And you brought up shoes, so I'm going to go there. And shoes, it's funny, is one of the most controversial subjects in running.
I know.
So can you give me the Cole's Note version, your thoughts on what kind of shoes people should be wearing?
Yeah, it's for everybody. There's no right answer.
Okay.
And if somebody comes and a patient comes in and just asks me what type of running shoes should I have, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
So I have to see him or her running. I want to see their pattern on their existing shoe. And it's possible completely 100% to have a normal neutral shoe and have a nice adequate running gait. So it doesn't mean that you're midfoot striking that you need a very minimalist shoe. I think you could do it no trouble with a neutral 8mm drop if you want. But I feel that the shoe itself, the more cushiony and the more soft it is, the less you're going to feel the ground. If the outer sole is more rigid and reactive, then usually I feel like they're faster shoes, because you can actually hit the ground and then leave right away because you actually feel the ground. But it's depending on the type of runner. Every runner is different. There's no one shoe, but usually I tend to suggest shoes that that they could feel the ground a little bit more.
Okay. And do you ever run barefoot?
I run with minimalist gear, but never that much barefoot.
Okay. Yeah, I same here. I mean, I'll do strides and like sprints and stuff in on a soccer field, like after I warmed up a little bit, especially in the summer and in the spring. But then I always try to really ease into it because, again, especially in the winter in Canada, like we wear bigger shoes. Yeah. I mean, just the nature of things. Like, I mean, when it's minus 40 outside, most of us don't want to walk around barefoot. But I like to be as close to the ground or as have as much feedback from the ground as possible. We're going to switch gears a little bit, and I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but I'm going to put you on the spot again and get you to talk about some of the experiences that you've had recently. You've had some really good results on the world stage. Can you tell us about your last couple of races? One of them was a snowshoe race, and one of them was a mountain running. Whichever one you want to start with.
Well, I do a lot of running, of course.
Yeah. The good thing is you practice what you preach. It's not like you sit on the couch all day. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's like we don't, yeah. So what happens is, I've been running since high school, not high school, after high school, university, slowly doing first 10Ks and half marathons and slowly building it up. But lately, these past 3-4 years, I've been running more seriously, and then I discovered trail running. Since then, I started racing in a couple of races, and I did good in mostly every races that I've done. So I really started to enjoy it very much, and then that led to bigger races. And last year, I was chosen to go be part of the long distance Canadian team. So we went to do Worlds in Slovenia, which is a marathon distance, but with 3,000 meters elevation.
Ah, piece of cake.
So it's very, very hard terrain, very, very technical. So it's an uphill of 13K, and then you're going down another 13K, and then it's another uphill of 6 kilometers, and then going down 6 kilometers, and the 6 kilometers. That second mountain was worse than the first one. It was so steep. And then it was quite hard, but at that race I did well, first Canadian finisher and 12th women overall. And
that's in the world too.
That was the world. Yeah. It was an awesome opportunity.
What were you thinking during the race? Were you saying like, I can't wait for this to end? Or can you give us a couple of thoughts that were going through your mind?
I had talked to my brother that morning of, I think he sent me a text. And usually after races, I can go like take a 4-hour bike ride or something like that. So he said, this time there, you give everything and you don't leave any energy for a bike ride after.
Okay.
So I gave my all. And that first 13K and then the second descent, we were just like me and a Slovenian girl, we were fifth and sixth. And we were very strong. And I was saying, well, that second mountain, it should be okay. But during the second mountain, I thought I was going to die. I thought, like, people were just falling over, and they were just, some people just did not finish. It was, I never seen this, anything like it. It was the most difficult race I've ever done. So when it was done, I gave it all. Yes, it was the maximum that I could give, and I was very happy about that, being able to give it all, yeah.
How does it feel to represent your country on the world stage?
Wow, it's amazing. It's more than you can ask for to represent Canada over out in Europe. It was the best moment ever. And then it developed into other possibilities also. Like now I might represent it again this year. I've been told that I might, I'm on a list to represent in Italy. So I'll see about that, but that should be this summer. So, yeah.
It's not a bad way to see the world. To run around these beautiful trails and then get to wear the Team Canada shirt.
Yes.
And so it's there are worse ways to kind of see how everything is going around and see some great runners and athletes from all over the world.
Exactly.
And then also you had another wonderful experience. I think it was in the last month or so, the world snowshoe running. I don't know exactly the term they use.
The World Snowshoe Race, and it was a 10 kilometer, and it was in Saranac Lake, and that one was pretty funny because It was 15 degrees almost, okay. And the snow was lacking in Lake Placid. So they changed the course. So the course into a little mountain close by.
Okay.
And they had to shovel snow on the course. So we were running in shorts and t-shirts with our snowshoes through creeks and mud and shoveled snow and ice.
Okay.
So it was quite epic.
Yeah.
So we finished our races full of mud.
Yeah.
And so there.
Yeah, I mean, when most people think of snowshoe running, they think of mud, right?
Yes.
And creeks. So it's... It must have been an experience for sure.
Yes.
And it's a total. And I know I've seen you at other snowshoe races where there's snow up to knees or your hips. And then this one is like the total opposite.
Exactly. So you never know with snowshoe racing. So there's this nice series close here by at the Arc. So yeah. The Mad Trapper race, and you've done some of those too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a very very hard course, so it's all up most of it, like the hilly course they call it, so lots of uphills, lots of steep hills, and it makes you work very hard, and you don't know what kind of conditions you're going to get. So is it going to be full of snow? If so, it's going to be very muscular. We had the Lopet here, so 1 week before the Worlds, at the Lopet, the 10K snowshoe race, so that in the 60s in the park close to Montbleu, so that's a very, very good place to train, too, because you got lots of hills, and it's all single track and technique. So it's, we have lots of place to have fun here and train for those races.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it shows you also that we're not really the boss.
Yes.
And I've been to some of those snowshoe races with Mike at the Arc, and it's sometimes the early race. He advertises a snowshoe race, and once you get there, he tells you, oh, by the way, it's a trail run
because
you know there's not enough snow, and there's no use to wearing your mm-hmm. snowshoes if there's no snow. How do you find the difference between snowshoe running or trail running or running in general?
Good question. I think that snowshoe running is the most difficult thing ever. It's very muscular, and you're having your snowshoes under, so in your... You know, you have that weight, and then you're running up hills, steep hills, and you're always, it's a maximum output all the time. And you're pushing up, but you're also working hard in the downhills, and you're making sure to stay on the trails. If not, you might go deep in snow on the side. It's the most difficult, I think one of the most difficult sport, and it builds up your VO2 max a lot. So it's a very, very good cross training during the winter, mostly if you're expecting races very early in the trail season. Because here the problem is, when we go into, if we compete out of Quebec, for example, like last year, my first race was May 1st, and it was a 50K. That was the qualifier for the Worlds, and it was in Burnin, BC. So May 1st. I think just the week before I could run on the trails here, because everything was snowed in.
Yeah.
So I did some snowshoeing during the winter, and I do lots of cross-country skiing, but most of it came from, yes, training on the snowshoes, and it's the way to get in shape during the winter.
Yeah. You must feel very Canadian, though, being having snowshoes, racing, maybe finish with a glass of maple syrup or a glass of beer, so which sport, you do a lot of different sports. Which sport would be your favorite these days?
Well,
I know you cycle a lot.
Yes.
You do triathlon, all kinds of stuff.
Like, I love them all, but I have to say that my number one is running. For me, running is the whole thing. Like, it's me.
Yeah.
I couldn't put the bike.
Is it because you're a podiatrist? Is that why you say running?
No.
It's just
the way it is. I love it so much. And I couldn't, you know what, I couldn't put the bike away. I even got a fat bike for the winter. I don't do it that much because there's so many things to do. But I couldn't put the bike away. I can't put the skis away either. But for sure, number one on my list is running. So yeah. The best of both worlds is to do running and cycling and running and skiing per day.
Okay.
Every day.
And trail running or road running, if you had to pick?
Oh boy, I mix them so much. I mix them up very, very much because I think that they work together beneficially for the athlete. I think that most of the trail runner that do only technique, so only very technical terrain, they lack the mileage and the speed when it comes to normal long distance trail runs, because you most of the time you have long long hills, long streaks where you really can go fast if you do a lot of road running. So in my better world, I mix them both. I think that in the park, you can do a lot of technical terrain and a lot of non-technical, like the simple number one or going to the fire tower and do these little ups and downs through Burma and stuff like that. And usually I leave from my place and I do road running, and then I step in the park and do trails, and then some are technical, some are less technical, and then make my way back home eventually. But during winter, I do a lot of road running because I spend a lot of time around the canal, and through lunch hours I run, and then I do the snowshoe, which is more trail. During the summer, I do the same thing, road running during the week mostly, and trail mostly on the weekends.
Okay, and the only problem chatting with you is that people feel very lazy.
Oh,
because you're
no.
always out there for a couple hours a day. What's your weekly mileage like these days? And do you fluctuate a lot from off season or season? When is your season for you? Because you basically you're active year round.
Yeah, active year round, and I just do a lot. Like it's a lot.
Is it mostly
hours.
Planned?
Never.
Going to enjoy yourself?
Yeah, for me it's playing.
Yeah.
I don't have I never have a calendar of what I need to do. I don't have a watch that tells me my pace. I have it just to monitor myself in the woods.
Yeah. and make sure you come back for work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But and you know what? Like I got to understand how my body works that way, and I go by the feel even through for a marathon. I never wear a watch, and I know how I can go to my usually 3 hours, sometimes sub three, and it's always like the same pattern. It's weird, but I don't use the watch, and I can know exactly what kind of pace I have. I just do a lot of mileage, and it's a lot. But now, my running calendar is big because I just finished the big North Face Endurance Challenge in December. That was a 50 miler in San Francisco, and that was a very, very good race too. And I thought that at that time that was going to be my last 50 miler because it's a lot.
Yeah.
And the next one would be next December because I wanted to do it again. But ends up I'm going to Moab in 2 weeks and doing a 50 miler for Salomon. So the Salomon Academy I'm going to be part of, and they just send you there and you run, and it's earlier than expected. That's why my season just didn't stop this year.
Yeah. Okay. But do you usually take a break? A little bit?
Yeah, a little bit during the winter. I tend
we just
to
go to Gatineau just to hang out at the coffee shop.
Usually not. Sometimes I do, but usually after a little something. But it's just a matter of you can do stuff out there, but you don't need to go hard.
Yeah.
You just have fun. And it's like playing. You can play on your ski. It doesn't need to be a workout. But it's like being active, but passively. So, it's a way to be more or less demanding on yourself.
But it's funny how what you consider passive, some people might consider more of a workout.
Everything is relative.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you're probably on the one end of the spectrum for activity, and that's why you're doing so well. One more question before we get into our my usual ending question is, what do you think has been part of your success? Because you've been a bit of a late bloomer. But what's been part of your success?
Well, for one, the love of the sport. Because I really, really enjoy it. So for me,
I couldn't tell.
No. So when you love something that much, you don't mind spending hours doing it. For the love of helping others through the sport too. But I've had a big injury there that's been creeping up on me the last years. And it was limiting me a lot. And it was it's called a endofibrosis of the iliac artery. And when I was pushing hard or even demanding or running on hills. It was affecting my cycling, my running, my skiing at the end. I had a very, very bad leg problem. So the artery was impinged in the just the lower abdomen, but that artery goes all the way to the toes. So when it's impinged and endofibrotic, you're demanding energy, but it's like your muscles are not having the blood supply they want and they need, so it cramps up. Okay. And you can't, it's like you can't use your leg, and it becomes very, very painful. And I was having more and more symptoms, and at the end there, I was just going for light jogs, and the pain would be there, and I had to stop, and then let the blood flow go, and then start again, and stop. And at the end, I had a surgeon that was following me, and I wasn't sure if I wanted the surgery, but at the end, it was a must. Yeah. So I went through the surgery, and the surgeon made sure to make that artery so big that the blood flow would go very, very well all the way to my toes. And I had a fast recovery, and after that I could just run. Yeah. And I had forgot this the feeling how you could run and have no pain. So I think that from all these years that I had to just lower myself under my threshold to run, and now I can run and have a heart rate that beats very like strongly. Yeah. And having no pain, it was like another discovery. So my surgery was last year. So it's been a year and 3 months now. So and it never the symptoms never came back.
So sometimes it does take a little bit of a step back or a step forward or step sideways. I mean, to actually get and there's more and more research shows that especially getting a good base is very key to getting some results down the road. But everyone wants the results right away, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to...
Oh, yes.
And I think I'm sure if you wouldn't have had that, mm-hmm. you would have went a lot harder. Whereas now you had no choice because of pain and because of...
I had the exact... That's exactly it. So I built a big, big base. It's the endurance base. And then you can work from there. So most of my runner patients that get injured, usually they want to go too fast, too soon, too hard. Yeah. And it's very, very common, the stress fractures, because you're putting too much mileage too fast. So it's just to have a big base or a strong base, but build it slowly, and then it should all work up.
Yeah, and now you're showing that you can still have lots of speed and lots of fun later in life. One more question before we end: what does wellness mean to you?
Well, I mean, wellness is all about being active, but and being happy through being active. Health is, for me, health is very, very important, and I promote it by being well surrounded. Also, what I tell to my patients is to be active, being outdoors, but being well followed by a group of practitioners also to help them through it. That's why I like to work with a massotherapeut and a physio, a chiro, an osteopath, so we can all work together for our patients so they can be active, be happy, but well surrounded. If they have some sort of injury, they can be followed by one of our group. And it's so important to live healthy. And
So looking at it, the holistic approach.
At the holistic approach, yeah. Exactly.
And if people want more information about your services or follow you on your incredible journey, where's the best way? Is there a website or Twitter handle or Facebook? Where's the best way to get more information?
Well, we usually put updates on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Other than that, through Facebook, you can find information through... I don't have a personal blog, though, but maybe that will start. Yeah. But we usually post a lot of information on our Facebook pages, CP, La Clinique Podiatrique de l'Outaouais.
Yeah, I know. I'll link to it in the in the show notes. But again, thank you very much for your time. I think people, especially people that know you, couldn't be happier with all the success you're getting. And best of luck in all the upcoming races.
Thank you very much, Eric. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
All right, thanks. And until next week, be well.